Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Peel Regional Police Association Town Hall addressing frontline shortages and tenure. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero to connect with the operator. I would now like to turn the conference over to your hosts, Adrian Woolley and Trevor Arnold. Please go ahead, gentlemen.
Thanks very much. Thank you for tuning in. Obviously, this is our first Peel Regional Police Association Town Hall meeting, something that we've been thinking about for a long time, and I think it's absolutely necessary for not only us to be in touch with you, but for you to be in touch with us. And I think the best way for us to do that is to do these type of town halls. It's difficult for people, obviously, to get to a physical location at a certain point in time in the day. Everyone's got life issues that get in the way, family, friends, and that type of stuff. So I think that getting on the phone would be the best way to do it. And that's why we partnered together with a company called Union Strategies, and they're helping us with our communication and media, and they're going to put things together for us to make things a whole lot easier for you to communicate with us. So that's why we're here today, and that's why we've partnered with them, and we want to hear from you, the members, with regards to your issues for tenure, as we know that there are a few out there, as well as frontline shortages. So if there's anyone out there right now that would be in the queue or that we have in the queue?
Just a reminder that to get into that queue, if you have something you want to say, whether it's about tenure, whether it's about frontline shortages, if you press star one, that will take you to the operator, and they will get you set up and put into the queue, and we can start hearing from you. And I see that we're starting to get some in here.
First of all, I'd like to say that I'm extremely impressed with the amount of responses already, with the amount of people that are actually online and listening. Is to me, it's awesome to see that so many people are listening. Thank you for calling in, and I believe we have more than enough people in the queue. I'm not sure if we can go to our first caller.
One moment, please. Our first question is from Ross. Please go ahead.
Hi, Willie, and everyone
listening.
Good yourself, brother.
I'm good. Thanks very much for calling in.
No problemo. I would just like to read a letter on behalf of the members of the tactical unit. So bear with me. I'm just out on a range right now on a course. I'm just going to try and read this off my phone as best I can. So over the last several years, Peel's tactical unit has lost a wealth of experience and seniority directly related to the current tenure policy. TAC is responsible for dealing with high-risk incidents and warrant service for the fourth largest municipal police service in Canada. We are currently one of the most junior tactical units in the province with a unit-wide average experience of 3 years and 9 months. Our mandate is to safely resolve all high-risk incidents. This is including hostage rescue. Our current lack of experienced officers creates a very real liability toward public and officer safety. A tactical officer typically starts to become proficient in general duties around the fourth year of their tenure, and the team leaders should generally have 6 years of experience to effectively lead a team. Currently, officers are being forced into leadership and training roles within the unit without the appropriate amount of experience, courses, or training. This doesn't even include specialty positions such as rappel masters, snipers, and breachers. Once annual vacation is factored in, the level of experience often drops further. Officers with 3 years of tactical experience are often being thrown into an acting sergeant and team leader role. And up until now, we've been fortunate that this lack of experience has not resulted in an officer or public casualty. It's not a matter of if anymore, but now becoming a matter of when something bad's going to happen. As an example, I like to use from 10 years ago, Toronto Police were bringing in a tenure policy and lost most of its experienced officers within their ETF. 3 years later, an incident occurred where an unarmed suspect was accidentally shot and killed by a member of ETF, that's Toronto's tactical unit, which was also directly linked to a lack of experience. Toronto Police realized the mistake they were making and abolished tenure for that unit. Our service, which claims to be very progressive, is just putting itself on a crash course to repeat other people's mistakes. A serious question everyone should be asking themselves is, if my family was taken hostage, do I want 3 years average experience responding, or do I want 10 to 15 years tactical experience responding? At 3 years, we're doing both the officers and the public a disservice by putting both in a dangerous position. On a side note, it would also be interesting to know what taxpayers of the region would think about the clear lack of fiscal responsibility. How would it be explained that spending nearly $120,000 a year to run a tactical hiring process, equip and train 6 to 8 new officers while removing your most senior, best trained, experienced, and equipped officers is fiscally responsible? We all know there will always be natural attrition. Thank you, Wooly. That's my letter.
Not a problem. Thanks very much for calling in. I appreciate that. Do you have anything personally you'd like to say, or is that just on behalf of all of your members?
Well, another interesting fact that is starting to arise, and I don't know if our service is realizing it yet, is that they're going to lose officers to different services because they're bringing something to the table after the experience and training that they're getting inside our units. But not just that, is any members from investigative, intelligent, mobile support, all these units that have such a wealth of experience because they work in such a busy and populated area that constantly has things occurring. Well, if you're kicking these people out of these positions and other police services are willing to take them on because they cherish and realize that, you know, you're going to bring that to the table, guys are starting to jump ship entirely. And just a funny thing from my personal experience was, when I was 21 years old, I got hired by Peel Police. I never knew a thing about Peel Police until I applied while I was finishing my policing school in Montreal, Quebec. And when I was at my board interview, it was a 5-minute interview about whether I wanted to become a police officer. And then it was a 50-minute interview about, I'm not going to leave and go back to Montreal or Quebec. That was their only concern, was that they were going to hire me, train me, and then I would leave the service. But now they're not realizing that 10 years later, they've put X amount of dollars into me, probably in the hundreds of thousands at this point, as a tactical officer. And once I'm tenured out, it'll be even more, that they're just, they don't care if I go to a different service like Hamilton, Halton, you know, Toronto, the RCMP. These police services are hurting for good candidates. And if Peel's willing to give them to them, I don't know why, but they're going to lose them.
Hey, Ross, Trev here. Just a quick question. Is your position that there should be any tenure, or just it should be longer?
Well, we argued for longer, and all we got was 1 year. The reality, I think tenure should be abolished across the board. That's just my personal opinion. But for a specialty unit, it should be at least in the double digits, at the bare minimum, because for us, just to get in and get decent takes a few years. If you get a specialty, then it takes a year of course to increase that experience and that specialty along. So before you know it, you've already hit 5-6 years in here, and you're just getting good at one specialty and being an operator, and all of a sudden you're getting thrown into team leader positions, and or you're about to leave. So personally, for the units that specialize as ours, I think they could do away without them, because you will still always have natural attrition. Like, in the 3 years that I've been in this unit, I've seen guys leave because they wanted to go get promoted. They didn't want to do the night shifts or be on call anymore. They didn't want to deal with the high level of liability that we deal with when we're thrown into all the high-risk incidents. They didn't like the SIUs till 6 in the morning. They just got tired of it, and they wanted to do something else. So you will always have officers looking for other opportunities, but when you create a plan to legitimately kick out a high portion of your unit every 2 years, and then what they originally wanted at the 6-year mark was you would then have officers with only 6 years experience in here, and every 2 years, 6 new officers come in with only 1 year experience. So the planning doesn't make any sense for future sight lines, and I would like to see something changed in the near future, personally.
That's awesome. Thanks very much. We appreciate it. We know happy you have everything to say about that position in attack, guys, and we're going to switch off to the U.S.
Perfect. Thank you, Adrian. We really appreciate everything you're doing for us.
No problem, brother. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Next.
Your next question is from David. David, please go ahead.
Hi there, thanks. I'm also calling from the tactical unit. These comments are my own. However, I'm speaking on behalf of many members of the unit. I've been with Peel for 15 years, and I've worked in TAC and ESS for the last two. This is strictly regarding tenure. After speaking with family, friends, and other members of the public, they're shocked to learn that officers responding to incidents involving the highest level of risk to the public, while highly trained, are not necessarily the most experienced officers in dealing with those incidents. They have a hard time grasping why an officer with years of expertise in a certain area would be moved out of that area for the sole reason being that they have reached a final number proposed by management. That expiry date is essentially saying that they are no longer required in their area of expertise and are just moved along. Some scenarios that I most often hear when speaking with members of the public are if a family member were to be the victim of a hostage taking or active shooter or are in a state of crisis, they expect the highest trained and highest experienced officers will be responding for the safe resolution of that incident. Conversely, if their child was the victim of sexual abuse, either physically or online, they expect that officers conducting an investigation and testifying in court would be the ones with the most amount of experience, minimizing any kinds of errors that may arise from a lack of experience. The general feeling from people that are not police officers is confusion as to why officers are deemed to be no longer relevant and forced to leave their unit. The public expects and deserves the highest level of public safety, and this tenure is not a way to achieve that. This brings me to my next point, which is cost. The basic constable training course at OPC is 3 months. The basic tactical operator course and selection process is over 2 months, costing upwards of $100,000, not including our salaries. Over the course of several years, the tactical officer will receive hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment and training, as well as complete thousands of hours of training that is limited to only a select group when compared on a provincial and national level. Once again, taxpaying members of the public I have spoken to are shocked to learn that the return on their investment is simply to move those officers along to areas where their skills and training are no longer put to use. New officers have to be trained, and the investment process starts again, only to reach the same conclusion. This cycle of wasted tax dollar investments is baffling, to say the least. No well-run, well-organized, successful private company would ever do this. Another issue with tenure is the effects on officer and unit morale. The competition to acquire a spot in a specialized unit or bureau is fierce. Once in those units, the individual officer sacrifices their time and work-life balance to be an effective member of that unit. Most officers I've spoken with will agree that around the 3 to 4 year mark is when an officer becomes the most comfortable in their role, starts to acquire expertise in certain areas, including court testimony. With the forced tenure, it is also at this time when officers are forced to start making plans for the future as they know their numbers up. So instead of focusing on honing their skills and expertise, they begin a countdown of when they have to leave and have to make decisions on where they will go next. For many of those officers, those plans can include switching to another police service. An environmental scan of similar police services shows several things. Other services have a tenure policy that makes sense with numbers that take skills and expertise into account. And at times, the tenure is not enforced since most of those officers will move on to other aspects of policing on their own accord. Most other services recognize the expertise in specialized units and therefore have no tenure policy, getting the most out of their investment. And lastly, there are several examples of police services that have enacted a tenure policy, which has decimated morale and have no tangible effect on public safety or lowering crime rates. In some cases, it's been the opposite. Those services have typically had to endure the rigorous scrutiny of inquests and the loss of public confidence before they realize the importance of retaining well-trained, experienced personnel. When you replace experience with inexperience, you are doomed to repeat mistakes, and mistakes cost lives. Why our service would choose to take such risks and enact a policy with the many negative examples out there is puzzling. If the public truly knew that this was the case, I do not believe they would stand for it. It has gotten to the point now that other police services are acknowledging our members' skill sets, experience, and expertise, and are actively recruiting our members to patch over. They provide our members an opportunity to laterally transfer to the same position in a specialized unit that we hold within our own service. When we have spent years working in a unit that we are passionate about and know that we possess the skills of only a few, why would we not take the opportunity to continue? Our skills and expertise are not only recognized by other services across the country, but we currently train many other services. These other services seem to acknowledge what our own service does not. Our service is basically telling us that once we reach an arbitrary date imposed on us, we will be moved to an area of their choosing, or we have to apply to a totally different area where years of training and experience will now be worthless. So I can see why it's enticing to some to switch police services. The feeling among officers is that while management may say they appreciate our efforts and experience, their actions are saying that we are worthless once we hit our expiry date. Personally, I work with colleagues and friends who demonstrate some of the highest level of professionalism and dedication that I've seen in 15 years. Our goal is to maintain safety and preserve life at the highest cost. We do not want recognition in the form of commendations, awards, or public relations opportunities. We simply want support from our superiors and management that we are appreciated for the work we do, our professionalism, the commitment we have, and the recognitions of our unique skill sets. The best way for them to support us in this fashion is once an officer has reached a certain time frame, leave it to the area supervisors and management to determine when officers should be moved along based on their performance or be allowed to continue and be an effective member of the unit. There have always been and always will be officers that leave their own areas for a multitude of reasons, replenishing the ranks with new officers who are the best candidates for those positions. Dozens of officers have left for family or scheduling reasons, inabilities to be on call, or career advancement, etc. This would leave the unit with highly skilled, highly motivated, and committed officers who can focus on being experts in their area without having to worry about looking to make plans for another unit or another police service, since our own service has put an expiry date on us. That's it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, David. I appreciate that. Now we've got some calls with regards to frontline and shortages on the front line.
Nice.
Your next question is from Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hi, it's Mark Gordon. I'm here in 180 Dairy Road. My next question isn't with regards to frontline. It actually is in support of the ongoing trend here about tenure. In our world here in the technological crime area, we're seeing valuable assets members leave for not only other organizations, but private sector. Our learning curve training requires us minimum of 2 to 3 years before we're up in the swing of things here. And then tenure is forcing people to make decisions they don't want to make within that the next 2 years. Because of that, we're losing valuable experience in the area of I think some of the most nefarious crimes that are being committed on some of the most helpless victims, and that's, you know, the exploitation of children. It's crazy for me to think that we're allowing valuable assets to leave our organization, to leave our areas based on a tenure issue. This is, in my opinion, the worst form of asset management. We need to change this. Because in the essence, what they were trying to achieve, I believe it to be self-correcting. For those people that want to leave for promotional aspirations or diversification in the portfolio, they do that on their own. And for the remainder, they can stay in an area where they can develop experience and pass on that experience to the members of those groups. There isn't an issue. It's self-correcting amongst our members. There are those that want to move up and have to change their venue for promotional and personal development, and that's okay. We can accept that. But in my opinion, the tenure issue is moot because it is a self-correcting issue. And I don't understand the hard, fast rules that they've set on members that are making them take hard decisions about their personal careers and development that are sending them elsewhere. And the organization in itself is losing. It's poor asset management, and those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from The Hill. Please go ahead.
Hi, Adrian. I just want to thank you and Trevor for hosting this. I think it's groundbreaking, first of all. I'd like to talk about the frontline shortages. And it's frustrating. I've been on the job 30 years now as a constable and a sergeant and also staff. And when you see our officers going call to call without any relief, it wears them down. And I think the frontline officers are getting overburdened. Then you get pressure from upper management telling you that they want your officers to take their lunch break, but how can they when there's priority one calls being dispatched at an unrelenting pace and there's no one to answer the calls? Sergeants are going to domestic calls by themselves as well to try to answer the calls that are on wait. So I'm not sure what the solution is other than getting more frontline officers to the platoons where they're needed. My fear is that something bad's going to happen to an officer because there is no 78 available, and then it's too late. We should fix this problem before somebody gets hurt. So that's my comments.
Thanks very much. Sorry, folks, we got cut off there, but we're back on here. And I think we have Justin up, if that's correct.
You guys know me. I just came out of TAC. I spent 10 years in TAC, so you know, I've been in the office, and first of all, very proud of VB and Dan, Dave there to bring up some great stats and give their opinion, and very, very accurate. As I said, I was in the office for 10 years and was sitting at the table the day we went around 30 operators. And what we did was we went around 30 people and we said, okay, guys, give us your honest opinion. When do you feel comfortable? When do you feel comfortable as the first truck on scene with a DI that's got expectations of hearing your action plans and what you can do to take over this this high-stress incident and scene? And we said to the guys, as you're rolling around in a TAC truck, when would you feel comfortable? Because let's face it, in the summertime, you got, if you're lucky, maybe 3 TAC trucks cruising around north end of Brampton and south end of Mississauga, and you may be split up, so you will be required to attend a scene and say to a DI, hey, this is my plans. And what we found was unanimously the guy said, yeah, at least 4 years. And I'm going to tell you, I did 10 years in TAC, became a TL, and I was a TL for 3 years and an acting sergeant, and it takes at least 4 years. It takes at least 4 years for you to feel comfortable with your skills, not only your skill set, but to have the backing and the experience to stand up in front of a DI and say, no, this is what I think we should do, and this is what my capabilities are. And, the call volume and the experience, and as I said, that's when we went around the table, it was unanimous of 4 years. So you are looking at, you know, a tenure of, I believe the last time I heard was 4 to 7 years. I mean, I can only see, and I saw in the office just before I left, I've only been out a couple of months, but the problem now is you're getting, for guys that are listening in, I'm sure a lot of you know how TAC is made up there, but a team operates with 6 to 7 operators. But you take the summer, for example, when our call volume is the busiest, you've got your sergeant off for the most part, so your TL, which is your team leader, jumps up to an acting sergeant position, which means everyone else in the team bumps up a notch. Now, that means, based on what VB was saying, and I saw it when I left, I knew a third of the unit in TAC right now has got under 2 years of experience. Half of the units probably got under 3 to 3.5 years of experience. So you start bumping up each guy in a lineup with your TL as an acting sergeant, you might have your number 1, 2, and 3 going in on dynamic entries with under 2 years of experience. I mean, we're putting guys in positions which is not only dangerous, it's not effective for our region, it's not effective to keep our operators safe, and at the end of the day, it's, as VB said, there's not a matter of if, but when. The other thing that I've seen is the process that we have to pull new guys in there. It's just broken. So I just came out with 4 other senior guys. So there was 5 spots to fill. Now, what typically happens is, you know, okay, 5 senior guys have to leave. We're going to fill up 5 spots. But during that lead up to when I was given a 6 months sort of nod, hey, you got 6 months to find a spot. Well, while I was trying to find a spot, we had an injury, and then we had another senior guy say, hey, you know what, I'm going to go and pursue a career somewhere else, and then we had another guy put into a different unit. So now you got a tactical unit, which is young already, scrambling to now fill 7 spots, and if you look at 7 brand-new operators and a capacity of operators of 35, what's basically happening, and we've seen it the last couple of processes, is that I truly believe getting into tax should be a very competitive process. We had 22 applications that were acceptable to fill, I believe, 7 spots. Now, what's happened the last couple of processes, we've seen we get very good candidates, but we've also got candidates that are not good under pressure. And over a certain amount of time, the decision was made to basically let them go. So,
I'm going to have to cut you off, brother, just because I understand, and there's been all three of you from TAC, and we understand the issues with tenure surrounding TAC and the importance of the liability.
We've got a lot of calls, buddy.
But we got to get to the other calls with regards
no
to
problem, guys.
And the other tenure issues, but I appreciate everything you guys do for us. Thanks very much.
Okay,
we're
thanks,
going
guys.
To our next call, I believe, is George.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's So I've been on the road just for a year after being in bureaus for almost 9, and I really have a new appreciation for how busy things are in front line. As we've heard, it's 100% true. As with the previous caller, I think it was Nigel, things he said. The one thing that kind of stands out is when I look at our staffing, we have our frontline shifts are running at 75% to 95% authorized staffing. Just when I've done some checks, yet I see all these non-essential bureaus are running at 100% staffing, and I just don't understand if frontline is so important. Why is frontline always pillaged and plundered and allowed to be nowhere near authorized levels of staffing when non-essential bureaus are? So that could be a solution to divert some officers and just kind of reduce the staffing in the non-essential areas until overall PR are staffed. And then the other potential solution is we all know we have a lot of officers, and the ones that are accommodated for non-injury related reasons, or other life issues. And they typically can only work weekdays. Why can't they work in a zone, push a cruise there? They have the use of force options. They have the training. Every additional body in frontline would help. As I said, it's called a call. You know, you go 8, 9, 10 hours without eating, XJKing nonstop. It and the summer is just starting. So, Adrian, I was just wondering what if you agree with their suggestion for bolstering frontline and address the shortages.
George, I'm sorry. You were cutting in and out there when you asked me the question. I hate that happened. If you could just ask the question again.
Just wondering if you agree with these kind of two points I touched on, reducing the staffing level of non-essential bureaus and maybe better utilizing our huge pool of accommodated officers, the ones which are not injury accommodation, so the ones which have their use of force options and can technically work on the road. Like why are so many people doing NVC reports and being in CDU? I'm just things like that.
And right now, we're just as association, we're just going to sit right now in the middle of the road with regards to that, and we want to give you guys the opportunity to have all of your comments and concerns aired. We're not going to be answering questions right now or anything like that. We just want to make sure that you have that venue right now through the town hall to air that out, and we can, George, I can call you right after this when we're done.
Thanks.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can we go with the next one? I believe it's Catherine.
Yes. Go ahead, please, Catherine.
Hi, yes. I'm calling. My concern relates to tenure as well, specifically how maternity leave and paternity leave, for that matter, under the current policy count towards your tenure. So currently, if you enter into an investigative bureau with a 3 to 5 year tenure, you're in there, you're there to develop your skills, gain experience to make you a better investigator, perhaps make you a more successful candidate for a future investigative role if that's what you so desire. But because you've had a family during that time and 2 to 3 2 to 3 of those years potentially of that 3 to 5 are spent on a maternity or paternity leave, that's time you're not developing skills and experience at work. So when you come back from your leave, you're less competitive as a candidate compared to your colleague that hasn't taken such a leave. And I think what's even worse is the fact that you can tenure out while on a maternity or paternity leave. So while most people, prior to reaching their tenure, start to think about their next step, maybe start planning for that, make themselves more competitive through maybe that's a ride-along in a desired bureau or just taking courses or taking on investigations to help make you more competitive in your next role. If you're on maternity or paternity leave, you don't have that opportunity. So essentially, I think the current tenure policy is penalizing you for choosing to have that family. And it's taking, in my opinion, it's ignoring the fact that family planning or pregnancy doesn't always happen for people when they want it to happen. They don't always get to plan for that. And for others, it happens when they perhaps didn't want it to happen at all. So I think you should be able to have children when that works for you personally without having to worry about how that might negatively affect your career, especially if we're of the opinion we need a work-life balance. And I think that current policy as it pertains to mat and pat leave is putting more stress on parents, working parents, that are trying to balance that career and family life.
Excellent. Thank you. Anything else you want to add? Or?
No, I mean, I think that there are a few, you know, people could say there's a few arguments that you're taking up a spot. And I would suggest that if we look anywhere where there's TTs, that's not a spot. Mm-hmm. Other arguments I've heard is that, well, you're being paid if you're an investigative bureau, an investigative premium. And my argument would be, I don't know what 8% of nothing is when you're topped up, but that's for a small portion of your leave. And then the idea that, you know, just wait and have kids, you know, don't apply for a bureau, don't be in a bureau and don't have kids when you're in a bureau. And again, I think that argument is ignorant to the fact that pregnancy doesn't always happen for people when they want it to happen. I don't think that should be something you have to struggle with. Do I have a child now or later because I might tenure out? And that would be... my argument against that.
Okay. Thanks so much, Catherine. Appreciate you calling. Like you say, it's important for us to hear from everybody, and we just have a lot of people in the queue, so we'll move on to our next one. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks.
Thank you. Taylor, go ahead, please.
Hey, President Woolley and Trevor Arnold, appreciate you guys doing this and taking the time. I'll be brief because I know you've got a lot of people. Speaking as the area representative for 21, I went back to the road in February. I was an RVU for about 4 years. What I've noticed is that our call volume has increased, and even when I was an RVU, I noticed that it was going up. Fortunately, we have some start times, which are beneficial, obviously, for senior guys because we're able to start at 12 or at 3. But the first thing I noticed when I went back to the road is we had 3 officers within the first week on my platoon that left to other services. Since that time, another officer has left. And what we're noticing is that there's a burnout on the road. There's obviously management has recognized this. In the last 2 years, they put out pay duties, but that's obviously the pay duty money is just grant money, so they could do whatever they want with that. However, fortunately, they're allotting that towards backfills. But the fact of the matter is we need to establish a minimum number of officers that should be out on the road. We're coming into the summer right now. Violent crime has gone up. We're getting shootings and stabbings, and that ties up resources on scenes and whatnot, as well as with transporting victims. I've acted as a sergeant since I've gone back to the road a fair bit. And I found myself going to domestic calls. I've seen other divisions come over to do calls, which didn't really happen when I was on the road last. also other officers have come up to me and they've said that there's a lot of officers that are sitting on calls longer and that there's just overall a burnout on the road. So speaking on behalf of 21, the majority of the officers are supporting us having minimum staffing and essentially having a number that at all times we have this many officers on the road. So that way calls are addressed. There isn't a time waiting for a lot of these calls and that obviously officers are getting their lunch breaks because there's a lot of no lunches and there's just a lot of burnout in general. Anyways, those are my points. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, Taylor. I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you. Ed, please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Adrian and Trevor. Thanks for having us on here. I'm going to speak to tenure and I'm going to speak fairly quickly just about tenure in general. I think the biggest argument for having tenure seems to be that it'll open up opportunities for lateral movements and therefore employees who become stagnant in their positions will eventually be moved on, opening space for new people. In essence, we're punishing everyone for the sins of a few. Once a supervisor recognizes that an employee is losing interest in their position or perhaps isn't putting forth the expected performance, then it's up to that supervisor to address this with the employee and document it. If the issue persists, management should have no problem moving that person to a new assignment without having to worry about a grievance. What I find very difficult is seeing employees spend several years working so hard to become the very best that they can be in their position. Peel Police invest heavily in training, creating experts in many areas. These employees come to work excited to do their job, bring in a good attitude, and in turn create a positive work environment. Then, once they're at the height of their game and the most valuable they'll be, they're told it's time to leave. This causes stress for many and has a huge impact on morale. Them and their coworkers are left shaking their heads at what is such a huge waste of resources. We know that there will always be natural attrition. There will always be officers who will leave their assignments in effort to get promoted or just to go to a spot. And I just want to say, echo what some of the other callers said, if any CEO of any company were looking at this policy, they'd be dumbfounded. One, for taking trained, productive employees, moving them into positions that they likely won't be as productive or happy working in. The colossal waste of money spent on training these employees, then to put them somewhere where they can't use their skills. And then third, accountability, to provide the customer the best product for their money. In our case, it's the taxpayer, who obviously spends a lot of money to have us. And those are my points.
Thanks very much. Appreciate you calling in. And I think we have Dave.
Hello?
Go ahead, Dave, you're on.
Excellent. It's Dave, 21. I don't have a whole lot of new things to add. I'm obviously agreeing with just about everything I've heard to this point. At 21 Division, I got about 8 years on the road here, so my experience lies on the road. Number one priority to me, obviously, is the number of officers here on the front line. I don't want to say it's an easy fix, but it is what it is. That's obviously, we are the essential service. We are the first to every single call. So I'll echo everything that everyone else says. However, I wanted to call about the 10-year policy. The reason being, from the road perspective, we're seeing a lot of supervisors, a lot of people coming out of bureaus that have no interest in being where they are. Because of the 10-year policy, people aren't concerned with making where they are any better. They're only concerned about where they're going to go next. So echoing a lot of what the TAC officer said, it's taking you a year, 2 years, 3 years to become proficient. You're only proficient for 2 or 3 years, and then your next 2 years are spent, either in cruise control or looking for somewhere new to land. It's created that carousel at 180 Dairy. The number of junior officers here on the road in acting roles, after 3 in the morning, putting themselves at risk of safety, risk of, liability, risk of being on a stupid YouTube video because we're putting them in positions they're not ready for. We need to get more experienced guys out here on the road. make them want to be out here on the road. And I think we're failing our younger officers. And to echo what Taylor said, they're leaving at record numbers as well. That's all I had to say.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you calling in there.
Thanks, Dave. If I can just jump in here for everyone that's listening, apparently there are so many people calling into this that it's actually jamming all the lines at Derry Road. If you are listening right now to this call on the Derry Road, one of the landlines at Derry Road, if we can ask you if you can hang up and call back in on your cell phone, apparently that would be greatly appreciated.
I don't feel bad. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, we truly appreciate it.
I'm not going to lie to you at all, one bit. I'm sorry that we jammed the phones at 180 Derry and that's shutting it down. Looking at the numbers, I am overly impressed with everyone that's calling in. I thank you for calling in. I'm glad that we gave you this opportunity. We're going to keep going, obviously, for as many calls that are lined up there. But if you could call, honestly, if you could call in from your cell phones as opposed to using a landline, that would probably be better for you and better for everyone down there at 180 Derry. But I believe we're ready for our next call.
Thank you. Your next person is Mystic 12. Please go ahead.
Hey there. I'm at 12, and I signed up to be a policeman for a number of reasons. And I put the uniform on today, and I'm proud. And I stand with my guys every day. And here's the thing. Frontline has been forgotten. And we are going into things that I've never seen before. We are going into punch-ups. We are going into people that are riddled with coke and fentanyl and stuff like that. And we don't have the people. And my guys feel compelled to actually, they feel compelled when dispatch is actually K-706-ing to go to the calls. What's happening, though, is the calls aren't getting finished properly and they're moving on. There's an officer safety issue, and I don't know exactly where we move forward at this point. I listened to all the TAC guys and stuff like that, and all their points are completely valid because we rely on them heavily as frontline. We look at them as they're the gurus, and we look at them for direction. That being said, everybody wants to go home at the end of their shift. Everybody wants to go home with their families. We signed up for a reason as officers. And shift work, yeah, I've been doing shift work 20 years. I get it. I just think that we need to take a long, hard look at what's happening out on the road. And perhaps maybe, because there's a disconnect between kind of senior management and stuff and the road, maybe we should encourage ride-alongs. Maybe we should encourage senior management to come out on the road and see what's happening. Maybe we should look at, you know, some of these bureaus that are kind of shut down over the summer when the schools are out. Maybe we should look at redeploying them to frontline because we are hurting and we need more bodies. I know that backfills are coming, but we need bodies. And Adrian, thank you for everything you're doing. This is an amazing initiative, and you and Trevor are doing an amazing job, and thank you for all you're doing.
Thanks very much, 12 Vision there. I appreciate the kind words. And honestly, at the end of the day, the reason that we're doing this is because I can't keep going up to the third floor and reminding them of all these things that are happening. I think that tenure and frontline shortages are the most important things that are affecting our sworn members anyways right now. And my biggest fear is that somebody out there gets hurt. One of our members gets hurt, and I don't want that to ever happen. I certainly don't want people to leave because of our tenure policy. So the most important thing is you're absolutely right, 12 Division, that you go home and you go home safe to your families at the end of the day. So thanks very much for the kind words, and I think we're on to our next caller, Mark.
Yeah, hello, Adrian and Trevor. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for doing this. This is fantastic. Open dialogue is amazing. Just a quick thing, as far as tenure is concerned, I concur with pretty much what everybody has said so far. I just want to give an example. If my son had come up to me and said he wanted to be an electrician, went through, did his whole entire apprenticeship, got his ticket, and then turned around and said, no, don't want to do that. I'm going to start over, become a plumber now. I would tell him he's absolutely nuts and what a waste of money. That's basically what our organization's doing with tenure. I've seen it myself and where I've worked in the past as well, where people have been kicked out for tenure and they've just started to learn how to do their job properly. And specialized units like TAC, since we're on the TAC wagon today, it seems, is a prime example where we should have those officers staying in for a longer tenure. I'd want an officer coming to my house on that kind of call that had that kind of experience, not 2 or 3 years. As far as frontline's concerned, I think one of the issues we have in our organization, and probably across the board, is our delivery service. Basically, you call, we come. I think we've got to the point now, we can't go to every call. We need to start screening some of these calls. Some of these calls we're going to are absolutely ridiculous, and they're not, and no need in any way, shape, or form for police to attend. MHAs, same sort of thing. We're going to so many MHA calls. I'm thinking almost 50% of our calls on the road are MHAs. That needs to be addressed, and we need more funding from the province to cover that. And just a final scenario, just a few weeks ago on a midnight shift, I attended a double stabbing scene. I was the first officer on scene or first sergeant on scene. I waited, I don't know, probably a few minutes before two other officers arrived to escort the two victims to hospital, leaving no officers for the scene as I watched everyone in a huge parking lot drive away, all my witnesses to that crime, because we had no officers yet again. It's got to change. We're not doing our cases properly. We're not doing the service, a good service for our community. And for the taxpayers, complete waste of money. And let's not forget, we're all taxpayers too. This is our service as well. That's all. Thanks so much for doing a great job and for hosting this today. Look forward to the next one.
Thanks very much, Mark. I appreciate that. And that's exactly what I need everyone to understand, you know, that there's shortages on the road. There's problems out there and we can't be effective as we want to be or the effectiveness that we used to be. And it's because of these shortages. It's because of these people and you're being asked to do so much more with so much less. And it just seems to be the, oh, well, you know, we rob from Peter to pay Paul, but Peter never gets paid back. And that's unfortunately the front line. That's the recurring, you know, trend that happens to the front line here in Peel. But on to the next caller, I believe, is John.
I'm just going to step in here for one sec just to remind, because we've had so many people, I keep forgetting that I should be telling people, if you have something to say, especially those, if you can give us the examples of things that are happening, press *1, and that'll put you through to the operator, who will then put you in the queue.
Hi, Adrian. My name is John. The reason why I was calling is I had a question with regards to two contractual issues that may affect the front line. The first would be the investigative premium. As the contract states, there are 7 criteria which would make a area eligible for a maximum 8% premium. When looking at those 7 criteria, a frontline uniform member will objectively meet 7 out of 7 of those criteria. Would it perhaps attract more experienced members back to uniform if they were given a 8% premium or did not lose their 8% premium when they returned to the road? The second contractual issue as it relates to frontline uniform personnel has to do with the 4-on, 4-off days, nights, shift schedule. The contract stock talks about a shift premium when you work 3 shifts. We've recently received over the past 2 years corporate communications which have outlined a 3rd shift designated by the service a afternoon's start time for the night shift. In fact, the service has created a DAN schedule out of the days and night schedule, and is it possible to reimburse those frontline uniform members who are now working 3 shifts, not 2, appropriately?
Thanks for your call there, John. We could probably discuss this more afterwards because we want to focus this really on the tenure and frontline shortages, but you raised some good points. And both Adrian and I sit on the bargaining committee, so certainly things that we can bring back to them. But feel free to give us a call up here and we can discuss a little bit further.
And that's for anyone else that's listening in. If there's something that you want to ask specifically to me, or maybe not over the phone right now or during the town hall, everyone knows my email, but it's awoolley@plpa.on.ca. So awoolley@plpa.on.ca, or everyone's got my phone number as well. Or Trevor, hit me or Trevor up. Let us know what you're thinking or what you'd like us to do, or for the contract stuff. That's exactly what we want to hear as well. Certainly not today with regards to the contract, but certainly before the summertime. I believe our next caller up is TJ.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I am in an investigative bureau right now, and it is a very specific role. I think that the management has devalued the frontline officers for quite some time, and I just want to touch on the investigative premium. Recently, I have taken a long, hard look at what has been happening in my work-life balance, and I've been unhappy in the role that I'm fulfilling, although I'm capable and competent, and I've been very successful in it. I haven't yet quite met my tenure, and management has advised, well, your only other option is to go back to uniform, and I love being in uniform. However, the only thing that holds me back, unfortunately, is this investigative premium and basically a pay cut. I would go back to uniform and be very happy in that role, except for that one aspect. So if that's something that the association would like to look at closely, and removing or awarding uniform that premium that investigative units currently have, I would support that. I have come to management about succession planning in my position because it is a very unique skill set, and management has told me that they don't do that. So even though my tenure is up in 1 year, I will remain unhappy in my position due to financial commitments. I will still do my job capably and competently. However, I won't be happy in it. And really, work-life balance, we want everybody to be happy. When I thought of becoming a police officer, it wasn't to be in this role, and I did apply for this role. But once I've determined what the role was all about, it's just not for me. And so my concern is the opposite of the maximum length of tenure. It's actually the minimum length of tenure. And I've been told that if I wanted to apply for another investigative role, that I wouldn't go out as an A candidate. It would be considered a B candidate. So however you take that, I feel like I'm looking a gift horse in the mouth because I do have a great spot. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, TJ. Actually, it's funny. You bring up a point, and so I've got one, somebody that couldn't call in, and so I've just printed off an email. I'm going to read it out because it touches the point there about the A pool, B pool, minimum tenure has to do a thing. So I'm just going to read this. So it says, for my own two cents, in regards to the tenure specifically, I know most people take issue with the limitation on end date, causing us to lose a lot of expertise and in some cases even lose great officers to other forces as a direct result. But just as big of a problem is the minimum tenure. It forbids people from being A pool A candidates for jobs that they are most qualified for. If the idea of the policy is to encourage movement, then having a minimum tenure has the opposite effect. The simplest solution I can think of that would benefit the organization and the members is to revisit the scoring policy for promotion. Make acting hours in all areas much more valuable than they currently are, and formal education less valuable in terms of points. This would encourage guys to move to different areas on their own accord in order to accumulate hours and make themselves viable candidates for promotion if that is what they seek. It would simultaneously eliminate the cost to the service incurred by paying for a bunch of degrees people are taking simply to benefit from the associated points. If the weight is being placed on actual experience and proven ability to do the job as opposed to the theoretical basis university degrees are premised on, see more candidates for promotion, less money being spent by the organization, and the elimination of this tenure policy that everyone hates. just thought I'd share that because it kind of piggybacked on what you were saying. And now if we could go to our next caller, please.
Maz, please go ahead.
Hold on. Maz?
Yes.
Can you hold on 1 second? I know you like to talk, so I'm just going to make an announcement one more time. Again, because we're getting so many calls from within the service. If you are at a division, if you are at the airport, if you're at 180 Dairy, please switch over to your cell phones. You are completely jamming the lines, and they, which I love. I absolutely dig that, but I want them. I want everyone to be able to do business as well. So please get off your landlines. Please jump on your cell phone or a different landline as opposed to the ones at the divisions or at 180 Dairy. I want everyone to be able to do business. So please switch over to your cell phones because you're just jamming up the lines. Matt, go ahead.
Hey, Adrian, can you hear me?
Yeah. You're loud and clear.
Excellent. Commend you guys on having this. I think it should become a regular feature. I get that we can't really have a back and forth exchange. So just some thoughts, the tenure stuff, the frontline stuff. I think everybody's bang on. All the issues are being hit, and I would encourage them to keep putting that out. I would imagine that there's a fair amount of management listening into this call, and maybe it'll be a bit of a wake-up call. They'll have their first opportunity to hear the depth of the problem and the issues that are surrounding the officers, because I think they're a little bit oblivious to it. I'm on my fifth chief at 30 years, and, you know, there's been good ones, there's been bad ones, and we've inherited this mess that we're in right now as a result of probably some weak leadership and some poor decisions over the years. And basically, weak leadership has kind of been rewarded in this organization, and it's gone hand in hand with some of the policies and the decisions that are being made. And you look at how things are going, especially for our frontline officers, which really the backbone of the organization. It's what the community expects of us. It's the boots on the ground, the officers in uniform, and they're being hung out to dry. They're being failed, I think, extensively by management and not looked after appropriately. The mindset of this organization in the last few years has shifted to careerism and developing officers for their careers to the point that they're beholden to the ones ahead of them. And unless you're seeking promotion, they somehow devalue you. Unless you're in certain areas outside of the front line, you're of lesser value. And it's a message, whether they realize it or not, that they communicate both through their words, but also through their actions. And that has to change. You know, we have no plan in this organization. We haven't had a plan for years. The problems that the officers are facing on the streets should not be happening. It shouldn't get to this point. It shouldn't have happened. We shouldn't have a chief with jars of bullets posing in the paper and being proud of that. You know, really? That happened on your watch. And that's something to be embarrassed, not proud of. And because we don't have a plan and because the officers are being hung out to dry and we're going call to call, they're leaving. I don't blame them. Or they don't want to be on the road. They want to be somewhere else. I don't blame them. If I have no support and I'm left out to dry, I wouldn't want to be there either. And I guess my comment would be to you and to Trevor and to the rest of the board at this point. I think you guys are at a watershed moment where we're transitioning from one chief to the other. And I would encourage you to do everything in your power, individually and collectively, to make people aware that are going to be choosing our next chief, the problems that we're facing and the issues that are going on, what we've been left with, what leadership in this organization deems acceptable. And I would encourage you to make sure that their decision process is based on the overall needs of the officers. And again, those needs are also intertwined with the community. The officers are overworked and our community is unsafe. That's an issue that needs to be addressed. And we need to demand that accountability from management. And I would think that you guys, now that we have this forum, and I would put this out to all the officers listening, because I've been here a long time, and I'm not going to be here much longer, but you guys are in a great position now with this leadership in our association to flex our collective muscle. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to remind management that there's over 2,000 of us. And
they work for us, not the other way around. And all these catchphrases, working it out together, an employer of choice, committed to excellence, community safety, whatever, that comes from us. So we need to make them accountable. And I would encourage Adrian, you and Trevor, to lead, I guess, moving forward, a process that it becomes instituted in our culture where we stop accepting poor management, poor decisions. We stop taking it on the chin because as police officers, that's what we're trained to do. We shut our mouths no matter what you're hit with, and we do our duty because we're sworn to do that duty. But that doesn't mean we need to be abused left, right, and center and have hollow promises made to us or, you know, phrases such as I could train a monkey to do your job as a management mindset. I think we need to get away from that kind of stuff. And I think we're in a wonderful position right now, and especially the younger officers really cherish having a strong association because now's the time where we start flexing that collective muscle and start getting the message across. Because really, I think we can influence a lot more by making the PSB aware, making the city councils aware, making regional council aware of our problems, and start impacting and whatever that, I know we don't like the words work to rule or any of that kind of stuff, but really, I think we're at that stage where collectively as an association, you know, these town halls are great. Everybody has the same issue, but what are we doing about it? And moving forward, Adrian, I would hope that you guys are going to flex that collective muscle of the membership and really start affecting the changes to make the workplace better for our officers and the civilians. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Maz, and I certainly appreciate you calling in. And there are so many points and so many awesome points that you touched on there. And if you know me, and I'm pretty sure that you do, obviously, you know I'm not going to be quiet. You know I'm not going to sit down and just take it. And we are moving forward, and that's why we're using this town hall, because I need everyone to understand. Everyone out there knows, but certainly not management, and certainly maybe not the PSB and people up there in the third floor are aware, because they think it's just Adrian going off and talking on a rant or what have you, and that's absolutely not the case. I need them to hear it from the horse's mouth, and that's why we're doing it this town hall, and that's so important for us to have your message and your voices being heard. The unfortunate part is that everyone's still on the lines at the service, and we've jammed up all of 180 Dairy and a couple of the divisions apparently. So we're only able to take one more caller at this time, because I think we've damaged so many calls. So we'll just take this one last call before we come to an end.
If anyone's out there, if you're still in the queue and we're going to take, I think Paul is the next one, and then that'll be the last one we're taking. If you're still in that queue, please reach out to us and you can speak to us directly. Give myself or Adrian a call or an email, whatever, and we'll get back to you.
Thanks very much, Paul. You're our last caller.
Hey, guys. Well, listen, first of all, thank you for doing this. This is a great venue for to try and get some more people involved. I know sometimes it's tough to get everyone up to the association physically, so great idea. I'll quickly touch on tenure first. I'm a frontline supervisor now, so tenure doesn't impact me. But I will say this with respect to tenure. With respect to some of the bureaus like TAC and FIS and even Mobile, I certainly see a value in either getting rid of the tenure policy there or at least extending it past what it currently is. And for the people that made some comments about, you know, that maybe they feel like management doesn't value them because of their expiry date, so to speak. I want to tell you, as a frontline supervisor, when I've had the pleasure to work with people that have left TAC, have left Mobile, have left FIS, and I've got a chance to work with them on the front lines, just so you know, from my perspective, your experience and what you add to the front line is invaluable. So maybe the perception is you're not appreciated by management, but certainly I can tell you firsthand that you're appreciated as a frontline supervisor, all that experience that you bring. That's all I'll touch on upon tenure. With respect to frontline uniform policing right now, I have people on my sheets that I haven't seen in the 2.5 years I've been up on a platoon, and we can't replace them for whatever reason. It's it's routine for me to call up to the communication supervisor now and tell them to call units from other divisions to help us because we just don't have the bodies. It's routine for me to call to say, don't dispatch a supervisor because if shit hits the fan, you've really got no one to manage any scenes. In particular between, you know, I'd say even after 2:30 a.m., I'm gonna mimic and echo everyone else's comments. We're really one or two really bad calls away from either putting the public at risk or putting one of our officers at risk. And while I appreciate everyone's got a concern, I would encourage everyone that's listening, if you have any solutions, if you have any ideas to move forward, and I know we've got some really good ideas out there, put them to paper, send an email, get together with your area rep. While I appreciate you guys have a difficult job to do, trying to keep all the membership, you know, kind of under your protection, I get that. I really do. I think the people on the front lines right now are really taking it on the chin, and it's just a matter of time before we see more people going off. Again, guys, thank you for this. Thanks for looking after us and to everybody else. Like I said, I just encourage you to, you got any solutions, man, bring them forward because we need a bunch of good ideas. So thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate your call. And again, I want to thank every single person for calling in, listening, and for calling in and for the people that that shared their experiences and their stories and their concerns today, because that's exactly the most important thing, is that not only that I can reach out to you, but that you can reach out to me. I think that's been the biggest problem for over, you know, decades, you know, since I've been on, you know, Peel Regional Police, is the lack of communication, not just from the third floor of the disconnect, but also from the association. And I don't want that. I don't want to be sitting in the seat and someone say, well, I couldn't get a hold of him, or he didn't listen to me, or he didn't care about my problems or my issues or my concerns or my safety. And at the end of the day, that's what we're here to do. We're kind of like your insurance policy, right? So, you know, if you call your insurance policy, you don't pay off for it, it's not going to work out too well. I think the other concern that, you know, this is not about bashing management whatsoever. It really isn't. It's about, you know, having them hear our concerns and having them hear our issues. But really the devaluing of the front line, I think, has been a historic problem for Peel Regional Police. We don't value the front line and where the rubber meets the road. And I think if you look at other larger services, you know, those people are revered. Those people, if you're a 30-year person or a 35-year person on a front line, certainly in another larger service, you're looked up to. And in Peel, unfortunately, it's kind of like, well, he's just a front line guy. And there's no such thing as just a front line guy or girl anymore. I absolutely think that's the wrong mentality. So I know that we can't take any more callers at this time, but I just want to get in my two cents there, and I appreciate everyone that called in with regards to their issues and concerns, and they shared them with us today, and I know that Trevor wants to jump in here as well.
I just want to quickly express my thanks to everyone for calling in. We were really hopeful this would be a success, and it obviously was a tremendous success, and we will be looking to do this again. My hope is probably to do this every 2 or 3 months. On issues that are topical and we need immediate responses to. So stay tuned for that. But that's all I have, Adrian. Anything else?
No, that's great. Thank you very much, everyone. Please be safe out there. Look after each other. And we'll be back to talk to you soon at our next town hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your conference call today. We thank you for participating and ask that you please disconnect your lines.